Hey people, do you want to polish your watch like a professional for under 20 bucks? Well, today's episode is being sponsored by Cape Cod Polishing Cloth, the only cloth that cleans, polishes, and protects. Order your Cape Cod Polishing Cloth kit today. Go to www.capecodpolish.com. In the kit, you get 12 metal polishing cloths, a buffing cloth, and a pair of reusable gloves. It's the best 20 bucks you'll ever spend, and you'll love the results. Okay, on with the show. Today's episode features my thoughts on how Paul Newman's Paul Newman Daytona sold at auction. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. On there, watch fans, it's Amit Dave Honda, and welcome to my podcast. I want to first of all wish you all a happy, healthy holiday season, and I hope you're all safe. I hope you're all staying warm, and I can't believe that this year has flown by the way it has, but as you get older, that's what happens. Anyway, so I wanted to talk to you today about how Paul Newman Daytona sold at auction for a staggering $17.8 million, making it the most expensive watch sold in history. This is pretty remarkable. I mean, I know the auction estimates were about $1 million plus. I don't think anyone could ever have dreamt that it would go that high. I mean, it's a stainless steel watch. It was $15.5 million, and then when you add taxes and all of that stuff, it comes to $17.8 million. So this took place in New York, by Phillips Auction House on October 26th, 2017. I can tell you firsthand that I watched the auction. It was obviously the closest thing to being there. You could feel the energy, you could feel the tension, you could feel the excitement, you could feel the anticipation. There were a lot of cool watches sold at auction, including an Omega Speedmaster. There was a vintage Panerai sold with a California dial at this auction. There was a bunch of really cool and amazing timepieces, and this was the one that everybody was waiting to see. What makes it so special? Well, throughout Paul Newman's career, he had quite a few different models of the Rolex Daytona in steel, but this model was different. It was manufactured in 1968, the reference was 6239, and it was given to him in 1969 by his wife, Joanne Woodward, around the time of his legendary racing movie, Winning. The watch has what collectors refer to as an exotic dial, which means the dial is white and it has black subdials instead of all one color. Daytona was written in red above, and since these dials were rare and Paul Newman made it famous, it's also become known as, in quotes, the Paul Newman Daytona. Paul Newman, was a racing enthusiast, and in a direct quote, he said, "The only thing I found grace in was racing a car." So it was very fitting that he got this watch in 1968 by his wife, Joanne Woodward. Paul Newman was so proud of the accuracy of this Daytona that he would place bets with his friends that his was more accurate than theirs. And after calling Central Time, a phone service providing exact time, Newman would collect his winnings. He loved his Rolex and he loved being on time. And if you think about it, being a racing enthusiast, getting somewhere as fast as you can, it's about timing. And it makes sense to why he loved the Rolex Daytona so much, and why he liked that particular Rolex Daytona so much, as it was a gift from his wife. It's just like one of these legendary watches that you hear about. The current Daytona that's made by Rolex is basically a modern day, for lack of a better term, interpretation of the Paul Newman Daytona. But getting back to this one, what also makes it special was it was inscribed on the back in sort of block lettering, which is still intact, and it said, "Drive carefully, me," on the case back. This sweet message reflected her fear, his wife Joanne Woodward's fears as a result of his need for speed. It was only 3 years prior, 1965, that Paul Newman was injured in a serious motorcycle accident where skin grafts were required on his left hand. With those unpleasant memories still fresh in her mind, she felt great discomfort every time he went onto the racetrack for a drive. So, you know, again, it had a personal inscription. It was a meaningful one, and it's still intact. Now, you know, Paul Newman, Nell Newman, she was, you know, dating this gentleman named James Cox, I believe in college. And one of the most, you know, I would say, horological mysteries of the 20th century was, where did the watch go? Because after, you know, after a certain period of time, you know, Paul Newman stopped wearing this watch, and the watch kind of was sort of never seen again. His daughter, Nell Newman, started dating a fellow student named James Cox. She went by a different name in college because she didn't want to deal with the scrutiny of, you know, being Paul Newman's daughter and what that would bring. Her name is really Eleanor Nell Newman. Nell was smart and beautiful. She was a girl next door type. She attended college in Bar Harbor, Maine. She kept her identity secret, using a stage name, Nell Potts. In the following semester, then she began to date James Cox. And during a dinner with a group of students, Nell brought a bottle of Newman's own salad dressing. And upon seeing Paul Newman's face on the bottle, James shared that he had met Paul Newman as a child at the Lime Rock Motorsports racetrack. He stood behind a rope trying to capture a picture of the drivers with their cars and was spotted by a fully suited driver who gestured to him to come onto the track to get a better photograph. The driver, he told them, was Paul Newman. It was after she had heard this story that Nell confessed that she was Paul Newman's daughter. Her name was not Nell Potts, but rather Nell Newman. Nell diligently hid her background, as I said, under the alias to insulate herself. Again, you know, from anyone with wrong intentions. Needless to say, James was in love with her, not for her famous background, and the two continued to date for nearly a decade. As described by Nell Newman in her signed letter accompanying the present lot or the watch, Pop would frequent the riverbank to check James' progress. During one such encounter, Pop asked James if he knew the time. Apparently, Pop forgot to wind his wristwatch that morning. James responded that he didn't know the time and didn't own a watch. Pop handed James the Rolex and said, "If you can remember to wind this watch each day, it tells pretty good time." Since that day, James treasured the watch and has preserved it in its original condition. So it's just amazing when you think about, you know, the watch was missing for quite a while. Paul Newman's wife gave him another watch in 1984, and that's when really, you know, the Paul Newman Daytona that just sold for $17.8 million sort of went missing, and people, you know, were like, where the hell did Paul Newman go? So it's kind of interesting that it, even though Nell Newman never married James Cox, and they dated for nearly a decade, it kind of stayed in the family because, you know, James Cox and Nell Newman are really good friends till today. So, you know, kind of stayed in the family, and in conjunction, you know, with Phillips Auction House, this watch was sold at auction. And I mean, I've seen a lot of live auctions online. I've seen live auctions in person. I mean, I was at the edge of my seat. I think we all were. And it was just unbelievable when I think about it. When its current owner, James Cox, the former boyfriend and now close friend of Paul Newman's daughter, Nell Newman, entrusted its sale to us, it was fairly obvious where the best-selling location should be. The Big Apple, with the East Coast being the home of the Newman family for over half a century, and the professional acting career of Paul Newman having begun on Broadway in New York, New York had to be the platform for this treasure. Now, that's a direct quote from Ariel Box and Paul Boutros of Phillips Auction House. Now, Ariel Box was the auction master. He was really commanding. He was really engaging, and he was really passionate, and he was like the perfect auction host. I'm grateful that I got to watch the live stream of the auction. It was the most intense and amazing atmosphere ever. Not only is this the most expensive Rolex sold, but it's the most expensive watch sold in history. The extraordinary outcome trumps the $5 million record set by Rolex Reference 6062 for the Bao Dai, once owned by the last emperor of Vietnam, and also the $11 million achieved by the Patek Philippe Reference 1518 last year. It's crazy when you think about it that the two most expensive watches sold in history are stainless steel. Not only is this an incredible and historic event, but it also further solidifies Rolex's place as king of the watch industry. You know, I've said this once and I'll say it again, and I will say it as much as I possibly can because it's true. I just don't understand people who doubt Rolex. I just don't. I get it that you may not wear one, you may not like its style, but most people, I think, their most common complaint is that Rolex is too common. Well, if you think about it, every brand under the sun, whether it's a diver's watch or a dress watch or just, you know, a tool watch of any sort, try to copy, emulate, replicate, however you want to look at it, Rolex. So when you look at it from that angle, yeah, it is common. Because Rolex makes a lot of watches. They make 1 million watches a year for the world. And then you've got all these copycats out there. So of course the message is strong that it's common. Yeah, it's a common look. But now in the last 10 years, since Rolex has gone in-house, has gone from, you know, hollowed links to solid links, to in-house movements, to, you know, everything being like, in the past, I would always hear that Rolex has kept the worst time. They definitely keep amazing time. Most of their watches are chronometer certified. In fact, all their watches, I believe now, are chronometer certified, with a variation of plus or minus 2 seconds a day, which is quartz-like accuracy. I would highly recommend that you look at these at Rolex as a brand. They were also just voted the most valuable watch brand in the world, which is unbelievable to me, considering the company they were in. They were the only brand that specific mission was to sell watches. All the other companies surrounding it, you know, sold apparel, sold fashion, sold, you know, accessories. So when you look at it, you know, Rolex was valued at, I believe, $9+ billion. And it's just this kind of auction of this magnitude, of this proportion, this historic event in time that we saw that took place, it just like reinforces Rolex's message. I mean, when you think about the Rolex Daytona at that time, it didn't sell the way it sells now. It wasn't, people weren't lining up for it. There was no, you know, I think it was very specific. You either had to be a race car enthusiast to enjoy it and understand what that meant and connect with that mindset. And Paul Newman, obviously being a racing enthusiast, did. And I mean, obviously his wife gave it to him knowing that, but you know, today people buy Daytonas and they don't use it for that purpose. They buy it because it's the watch to have, or it holds its value, or it supersedes its original retail value, or, you know, that's the watch that says that I've arrived. All those messages are very positive messages, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know of any other watch brand that can manufacture a stainless steel watch for for retail of $12,400 and it's going for $18,000, $19,000, $20,000 all day, if you can find them. I mean, Rolex is also, for those of you out there who are looking to buy Rolex, who aren't sure about Rolex, who have been on the fence about Rolex, who have dismissed Rolex, but maybe may have heightened your curiosity after hearing this, this podcast. I mean, this is the first year in history that Rolex is not even shipping their retailers, Submariners, and other sports professional models like GMT Masters and, you know, other models that are normally bread and butter, because Rolex's quota was fulfilled in August. They basically ran out of merchandise. I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, a company's running out of merchandise, which again, further, the prices of these watches are going to go through the roof. And it's just going to keep happening. And I know they haven't had a price increase for 5 years, but they're definitely due. I mean, they'll never go down in price. They'll either stay where they are or go up. But that's what makes Rolex so amazing. That's what the mystery of Rolex is. How do you produce 1 million watches a year for the world, and yet you hold your value better than any watch brand in the world? It's still like a complete misnomer. People don't get it. I don't understand it. They are king for a reason. And I know I'm rambling on now, but my first watch was a Rolex, so I'll never, you know, my first real watch was a Rolex watch, and I can tell you it was a tank. You know, to me, Rolexes now are a little small unless you get, you know, the ones like the Deep Sea 4000 50th anniversary or the James Cameron Deep Sea or even, you know, the Explorer 2 42 millimeter. Those are the biggest watches Rolex makes. And you know what? When I see a Rolex on someone's wrist, it still makes me stop. Even if it's a Datejust, even if it's something that's just even way more common than the harder to get stuff, it's got a very specific, iconic look that transcends time, that transcends culture, that transcends everything. You know, I mean, they're timeless. You know, when I see, whether it's a Datejust from the 60s or a Datejust today or an Explorer, you know, Explorer 2 from the 70s, or I see a Daytona from the 60s or whatever, and I see one today, I stop out of respect almost to the brand, because I don't know, there's no one who's kind of done what they've done, and there's no one who's achieved what they've achieved. And on top of all that, they're a nonprofit organization, and most people don't know that either. I've gone way off track and I've gone on this ridiculous Rolex tangent, but I'm telling you honestly, if you're looking for a watch that's going to hold its value, that's got serious street credibility, that is a benchmark, that is completely elegant in ways, that's Teutonic, it's German, because that's the founder, Hans Wilsdorf, was German. He created the brand in England. So it's very English in a way as well. And then yet the company is based out of Switzerland, so it's very Swiss. So it has all of these amazing elements. And, you know, that's why people rush when they make money to buy a specific Rolex. So those of you who have been doubting it, take another look and you may just see something different. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I had a bunch of watches, very inexpensive watches, Swatches, calculator watches, Movados, Tissots, Hamiltons, Longines. You know, I worked in a family business, and I can definitely tell you, since then I've owned probably 100 watches or more, and I've owned everything you can imagine, from inexpensive watches at $40 of, you know, to, you know, a very expensive $40,000-$50,000 watches, from every brand you can imagine. But I keep going back to Rolex, for a reason. I mean, and ironically, I don't even own a Rolex right now. I own a Tudor, which is owned by Rolex, because I love their DNA. I love the vintage part of Rolex. I love that. Like, when you look at a Rolex Submariner now and you look at it then, again, it's classic. It's totally classic. It's totally transcends time. It's totally beautiful. You know, and you see the inspiration behind, you know, they don't need to do anything, really. All they really need to do is make bigger cases. And they've worked on their movements, and they've worked on their clasps and their bracelets, and they use the highest grade of stainless steel, by the way, which is known as 904L stainless steel. You know, 904L steel is non-corrosive. When you look at it, it looks like white gold. You know, when you look at a, that's why it's like, I don't even understand why Rolex makes white gold, because their steel is so refined, it's so sophisticated, it's so solid, it's so beautiful. It just has this very rich look to it. And you know, a lot of people say, yeah, they're very expensive. Yeah, but they hold their value. I mean, they're just, they're a complete and amazing brand. A marvel. I mean, just an amazing, amazing brand, and I will never have enough good things to say. But in any event, I hope this podcast helped. I hope it gave you some inspiration and some insight and some knowledge and some call to action. I'm an official luxury timepiece concierge. I can help guide, advise you, and help you source a watch. I work on a $150 consultation fee. So, you know, that will get you an hour of my time, some emails, some calls. And if you decide to purchase a watch through me, I will be happy to deduct the $150 consultation fee you paid from the final agreed upon price of the watch. So it's a win-win for you. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Check out my website, www.amitdevanda.com. It's a highly immersive website. You can check out my world-renowned blog. You can check out my videos. You can listen to my podcasts. You can engage my services. You can see my press page. You can see my guidelines if you're a buyer and if you're a seller. When you go to my website, sign up for my weekly newsletter. It's a great way to stay engaged without, you know, committing anything, really. You just give your email address and boom, you get an email once a week, and you get also special offers that I may have and things that I don't make available to the public, and you know, you'll feel like you're in the know. It's a great way of really feeling you're a part of something. And I cover all kinds of brands. I cover brands from like $150, you know, all the way up to $1 million. I mean, I write what I like about. I also distribute Kingsley 1945 watches, which are style, designed, and hand assembled in Providence, Rhode Island by the Kingsley Watch Company. I have a very unique and special partnership with the owner and founder, Ramon Kingsley. I can do customizable things that no one else can do for additional fees. Check out my Instagram and my Twitter. My handles for both are at Amit Dev Honda. And until next time, rock on and fly back.